Dr. Paul, welcome to Against the Wind, Doctors in Science Under Fire. This show today features Dr. Stephanie Seneff, MIT senior research scientist and author of the book Toxic Legacy, the most important book, I believe, on glyphosate. But I'm really covering with her the detailed article she co-wrote and published on the suppression of the innate immune system by the COVID-19 vaccines. This is super important, but don't miss the ending part of her interview where I ask her the question everybody's been asking me and she answers it perfectly. What do I do if I feel like I'm suffering from side effects of having gotten the jab? She answers it perfectly, don't miss it. Dr. Paul, coming to you from the heart. I've had this sense that it's time to be vulnerable. Newsflash, I'm a pediatrician. Kids are not impressed by your accomplishments. They don't care that I've authored books. They don't care that I graduated from Dartmouth Medical School, that I have this huge successful clinic. Heck, I have 1.6 million followers on YouTube. Actually, some of the kids do care about that one. But for the most part, when you're with kids, there's just a presence and a being connected. Are you being vulnerable? They know. They sense. They actually don't care that I lost my license. They don't care that I'm divorced. They don't care that the medical board is destroying my career. None of that really matters. So what do our kids need? They need us to just be there. Be present, be loving, be connected, and be there for them no matter what it is they're going through. Parents out there, get the masks off your kids, hug them, touch them. We all need human touch, skin to skin touch. Love your children, share yourself, share your love. It's working, it's amazing, and I wish it for you too. Welcome, Stephanie Seneff. What a privilege it is to have you back on our show Against the Wind. Thanks for joining us.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for having me.
You are still a senior research scientist at the Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory at MIT, right?
That's correct.
I mean, you're one of the smartest people on earth that I know. And and I think your recent publication, I'm going to challenge you to try to explain it in ways that us less scientifically trained people, so we can understand it. Like, okay, so I think maybe this is the title, Innate Immune Suppression by SARS-CoV-2 mRNA Vaccinations, the role of G quadruplexes, something you'll need to define, exomes, which you'll need to define, and microRNAs, which probably need to be defined for most people. I'll read a little bit of the abstract because this says a lot. The mRNA SARS-CoV-2 utilized genetically modified mRNA encoding spike proteins. These alterations hide the mRNA from the cellular defenses, promote a longer biological half-life for the proteins, and provide higher overall spike protein production. However, there are very different immune responses to the vaccines compared to the response of an infection to SARS-CoV-2. As we will show. Just to put it simply, my conclusion is that the natural immune system that we're blessed with, that you're calling very intricate, and I believe you, and you're about to explain some of those intricacies, our natural immune system is amazing. And I believe it may be superior to anything vaccine induced. And this paper, I believe, might add a whole lot of weight as relates to the SARS-CoV-2 infections and the vaccines.
Absolutely. And I agree with you. I came to that conclusion. It was a slow process for me over many years, becoming aware that some of the vaccines were really problematic, like the MMR. I've been looking at vaccines long before COVID arrived and writing papers on them, actually, about my concerns and their relationship to autism and all of that. And gradually, I would sort of say, oh, yeah, well, smallpox and polio, sure, those are good, you know. But then eventually I was like, oh, no, those aren't good either. So I kind of reached a point before COVID, I reached a point where they don't work. The vaccines do not work the way they're intended. And they cause more harm than good, pretty much all of them. But these messenger RNA vaccines are way out there in front of all the other vaccines. really far more damaging. I am so concerned about the future of our species, really, with this massive, intoxicating injection into the huge numbers of the population. It's just really frightening to me. And so I'm going to do everything I can to get my message out and to do the science that I need to be able to understand what is going on, because we're seeing the evidence so clearly, you know, with respect to the reports in the VAERS database are just overwhelming numbers of really nasty things happening in association with the mRNA vaccines. And I don't understand why the government is like, oh yeah, that looks fine. You know, how can they look at that and say it looks fine? I don't understand.
It perfectly safe. Reason.
Safe and effective, safe and effective. That's the message we're hearing. And it's such a lie. I mean, it's just really amazing. So the thing is, these vaccines are extremely unusual. It's a technology that's been developed and refined over decades, really since the 1990s. And they've always had trouble getting it out because they've tried to have offered various products that are messenger RNA vaccines against cancer, for example, and they've never been able to get them past the early phases of testing trials because of toxicity.
Yeah.
So it's always been a problem with toxicity. And the only way they could have gotten past it is to have an emergency. You know, once you have a pandemic, declared emergency, now you can sort of rush through the product and skip some steps and get it out there and then force the population to take it, which is so amazing to me that they have the power to do that. So anyway, it's just like this messenger RNA that they've designed is not at all normal. You know, people think, oh, a vaccine, they're sort of used to, oh yeah, just a vaccine. I know about vaccines. That's fine. Maybe a few, side effects, but no big deal. That's not the case here. This is really, really extraordinary science. Very sophisticated technology, but they have ignored the signals that they should have been seeing as far as why this is not a good idea. And this messenger RNA as people probably know, I'm talking about the messenger RNA vaccines, not the adenovirus ones, although they have their own issues. Mm-hmm. So this is Moderna and Pfizer.
Yeah.
Messenger RNA. Those are the majority of the vaccines that are showing up in the VAERS database, something like 93% of the events in VAERS for 2021, 93% are related to COVID-19 vaccines. Wow. And only 7% to all the other vaccines. This is sort of the signal that's there. It's so clear.
It's huge.
And then in that 93%, there's only about 8 or 9% that is the adenovirus vaccine. The rest of it is the mRNA vaccine. So that's a huge signal of toxicity.
So there is this differential response that you identified in your paper. Why do you think the genetic modifications induced by the vaccines are the likely source of this?
Yeah, well, so what it is that they've designed the messenger RNA. First of all, they've humanized it. They've stuck things on the end that make it look like a human messenger RNA molecule rather than a viral molecule. So that's kind of a stealth entry because the cell doesn't realize it's been invaded by a virus. It's going to make a protein that is a toxic protein that a virus makes, but it's not a viral messenger RNA. So it misses that whole signaling that normally happens when a virus invades. The cell immediately recognizes, oh, I've been invaded by a virus, and it sends out alarm signals and brings in the immune system to respond to that. But these guys don't look like viral, they look like human. But worse than that, they've modified it in big ways. They've actually changed the mRNA code. They've done code enhancement, which basically encourages it to make more of its product, which is a spike protein, make it in a hurry, make more of it. And then it basically has all these extra guanines. It turns out that's how you can do that, is to put a lot of extra guanines in the RNA. So the RNA sequence that is in the vaccine is not at all the same as the RNA sequence that's in the virus. It codes for almost exactly the same protein, but it does have a genetic modification in there, where it has a pair of prolines next door to each other, which prevents the protein from going into the membrane, makes it stick onto the ACE2 receptor, which means it disables the receptor. So the virus protein is much less able to disable the receptors than the vaccine protein is. Disabling the ACE2 receptors is how you get things like myocarditis in the heart.
So that's why vaccine injury or symptoms induced by vaccines are so much more severe in most cases, probably.
Yes. I mean, I think there's many symptoms that I think the vaccine is more likely to induce than the virus. If you catch the virus versus you get the vaccine, the vaccine is worse in terms of doing these things. And that's one reason, is because it makes the wrong kind of spike protein. The other reason is because it's the wrong kind of messenger RNA. Not only does it not generate those signals, but it messes up all the other signaling, forcing the cell to drop everything else and just make tons of spike protein. Can't stop making it because it's turned off the normal regulatory elements that would allow you, the cell, to notice, oh, I've got to stop making this protein. I don't need any more of it. I have enough. You know, it doesn't see those signals.
Okay. Is that the type 1 interferon signaling that gets impaired?
Yeah, absolutely. And first of all, it doesn't respond with type 1 because that's the response to the viral RNA, which isn't there. But not only does it not respond, it actually creates a whole process that ends up disabling it for everything else. It actually turns off the ability of type 1 interferon to do its signaling properly, systemically, for everything else. Tremendous power to alter cell policy, to get the cell to do something very different from what it was doing before.
I think your paper talks about, this disturbance in regulatory control of protein synthesis and then actually affecting our ability to surveil for cancer.
Absolutely. And that's the thing with this type 1 interferon, because these microRNAs that are packaged up with that in the exosomes with that spike protein by these human cells that are forced to make it, those microRNAs get taken up by immune cells. And then what it does to them is it makes them be unable to respond to type 1 interferon, and it makes them induce an inflammatory response, which is really bad. An inflammatory response in the brain, you know, that's damage. That's brain damage. That's going to cause neurodegenerative diseases.
Is your understanding, and did you look at or find, that vaccinated individuals end up with a much higher load of spike protein than a person who's naturally infected with SARS-CoV-2?
That's exactly what I think is happening. And the critical thing is that the people should appreciate this. When you catch the disease, you know, it comes in through the nose, it maybe gets down into the lungs. If you have a healthy immune system, it doesn't go beyond the lungs or even beyond the nose. You know, if you've got a healthy immune system. Now, we don't have a healthy immune system in this country because we're all being poisoned by toxic chemicals. I particularly single out glyphosate, as you know. The virus comes into the lungs. You've got a good immune system. You get rid of it. Some people don't have a good immune system. It gets into the blood. And from the blood, it can get into the organs. You know, so there's like these stages. But it takes a really bad immune system to get to the point where the virus spike protein makes its way to the spleen. That's kind of an end stage disease. And in fact, they're very proud to announce that the vaccine produces a tremendous immune response, fantastic antibody levels to the spike protein, sky high, much higher than what you normally get from disease. And in fact, when studying the disease, you see that the people who have very severe COVID are the ones who produce really high levels of antibodies. So people who have a mild case, they might not produce any antibodies to spike. Like, they don't need that. You know, they can tell their immune system is perfectly fine to clear this without any help. Antibodies are problematic because they can cause autoimmune disease. And Greg Nye and I wrote an earlier paper that's been peer reviewed that where we talked about a lot of things, but one of them was this issue of autoimmune disease as a consequence of these sky high levels of antibodies that are produced to the spike protein by the vaccine. Vaccine works very, very well to generate high levels of antibodies, although they fall down very quickly. They degrade, you know, the levels drop over time. So after about 6 months, I think it's pretty much a wash. After about 6 months, you no longer have protection. So you got to keep on getting these booster shots. And worse than that, it's disrupting your innate immune system, as I said, with this type 1 interferon response. It's messing that up. And that's going to prevent the production of these CD8 plus T cells, which are cytotoxic T cells. They can clear an infected cell, and that will stop the spread of infection. And they're not produced. In fact, another study that we talk about in our paper, a really lovely study that showed that the vaccine immune response is very different from the virus-based immune response in the respect of two things: insufficient type 1 interferon response, which is what our paper is about mainly, and insufficient levels of CD8 plus T cells. Those are elevated in response to the virus, but not to the vaccine. Mm. And so this is really disturbing your immune system in a big way.
Yeah. So folks, all that CD stuff that you're hearing, I like to just boil it down to simple languages. And this, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Stephanie, the innate immune system, innate means born within, you have it naturally. It's not something that you want to ignore. Okay. Any way that we can boost that natural innate immunity
really helps us fight all infections, whether it's SARS-CoV-2 or the next variant or any other virus for that matter.
Or cancer.
Or cancer, exactly. And so this vaccination program that we have has been harming our innate immune system all along. That's what you and I started this conversation talking about. But this particular jab, hard to call it a vaccine, this COVID-19 mRNA technology is destroying our innate immune system like nothing we've ever seen, right? And so this is where your vaccinated individuals have now put themselves at greater risk of all other infections, at greater risk for cancer. And then how does it equate to the myocarditis and thrombocytopenia and some of the other things?
Yeah, that's really interesting too, isn't it? And we have a section about that in our paper, the platelets, because I think what's happening is that the spike protein's getting everywhere. You know, it's being poured out of the spleen. These immune cells gather in the spleen. They're trying to teach the B cells and the T cells to produce the antibodies. But in the meantime, there's all the spike protein flowing, getting around everywhere. And so one of the places it gets to is the heart. And of course, all the vasculature. And so it's once the antibodies are produced, they then bind to the spike protein, but then they also bind to platelets. So they kind of allow the platelets to snag the spike protein. And I think what's going on is that they're trying to use the platelets as a mechanism to clear the spike protein. You need to get rid of it. And so there are these receptors in the platelet that bind to these IgG antibodies that are produced in overabundance by the vaccine compared to the disease. And so those are the antibodies that will cause this trouble of the platelets actually binding to the spike protein and the antibody. And then that binding causes, it activates the platelets. And when platelets are activated, then they start to do all this stuff of forming blood clots, precipitating out, making these blood clots. So there's like a systemic reaction of blood clots all over the body. And you see, and this happens after delay. And that's one thing that I noticed very clearly in the VAERS database. I did this only recently. There's a lot of information in VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. Mm-hmm. And I looked at all these different, there's all these different thrombosis things. You know, there's deep vein thrombosis and cerebral thrombosis, many, many different. I think it's like 70 different labels
and
of reactions.
Thrombosis being clotting. So for our people who don't know that term, there's just clotting happening all over the place.
Yeah, all over the place, all these different thrombosis events. In VAERS. And what I did was I took the top nine or so, the ones that had the most counts. I added up those nine for all the COVID-19 vaccine events in 2021. And I compared that to the sum of those nine events for all the other vaccines in 2021. And what's happening is 99% of the cases are related to COVID-19 vaccines, 1% to everything else. That includes the flu, the MMR, all the ones the kids get, all those vaccines, 1%. So this is an extremely strong signal. And what's interesting is that pulmonary embolism is also 99% COVID vaccine, 1% everything else. And when you look at the time, I looked at the time between the vaccination and the event, you know, when do they get the thrombosis? And there's a nice peak in this range of 15 to 30 days. 15 to 30 days is when you get a peak in this thrombosis response. Well, the antibodies typically appear after 14 days. So it's very clear to me that it's the antibodies that are causing this thrombosis because, you know, the spike protein is going to the brain along the vagus nerve. So you've got the brain and the spleen are picking up all the spike protein. They're using the platelets to clear it. And then that's what's causing the platelets to form these blood clots, to clear that spike protein. It is a mess. It is really a mess.
It's a scary mess. Can the spike protein from the vaccine be transmitted to a future generation?
I think so. And we found an amazing paper on sperm from 2010, so long before COVID, the paper on sperm. And it showed that sperm can take up foreign messenger RNA, which is what the spike proteins are. The vaccines contain foreign messenger RNA. The sperm can take that up. They have enzymes that can convert it into DNA, and they make circular DNA out of it, and they put it inside plasmids, little packets, lipid packets called plasmids. And then at the time of fertilization of the egg, all the sperm release those plasmids into around the egg, and the egg takes them up. And so the egg is taking up plasmids containing foreign messenger RNA, and those plasmids can survive. The egg will then, grow into a fetus and get born and grow into an adult and have kids and all of that. And over that entire time, that person still has those plasmids. They can reproduce themselves. They can make proteins. They can do everything. They're just not part of they're not integrated into the nuclear DNA. They can also become integrated into the DNA with other kinds of things that can happen. So potentially,
wow,
they could become integrated into the human DNA and become permanent in our in the human cell line. So really, yeah, really scary stuff.
Yeah,
and if a child is exposed at that point, you know, at the beginning of life, it's exposed to this protein and it's going to think it's a normal human protein. It's not going to be able to build antibodies to the spike protein. And I don't know how it would respond to the virus, but it certainly would be able to spread disease, because I don't think it would be able to fight the virus if it can't. If it thinks that protein is a human protein, it's not going to be able to produce antibodies to spike. And I don't know what the consequences of that are, but it's right, quite interesting to think about.
So just thinking hypothetically here, would you rather have no antibodies against SARS-CoV-2 or a low level of antibodies and just rely on your innate immune system? Would that be a healthier state of affairs? Or what do you say to this whole antibody thing? We're all, our public health people, our infectious disease folks are always putting antibodies as the goal. You know, we got to have antibodies. What do you say to that?
Absolutely. I think you're much, much better off to have a strong innate immune system than you are to have antibodies to spike. And in fact, when you catch the disease, it's not just spike protein. That virus makes a lot of other proteins besides spike. And the proteins that it makes internal to the virus are much more stable across different coronaviruses. So in fact, with the infection, you can develop antibodies to all those other proteins as well. And those internal proteins are a much better bet because they don't change. Spike protein is highly variable. It keeps on changing all the time. We can't keep up with it. Whereas those internal antibodies to those internal proteins will stick around and work on all kinds of other coronaviruses, much more general solution to the problem. Mm-hmm. And of course, I don't think antibodies are needed. I think the body reluctantly makes antibodies to anything. It'd much rather be able to clear it on its own. And we have a very powerful innate immune system. I have a chapter in my book on glyphosate about glyphosate's effects on the immune system. And in fact, it hits hard on the innate immune system, disrupting critical proteins involved in capturing those viruses. I've talked about it in other interviews as well, because there's these surfactant proteins in the lungs that stick out, on the lung surface, and they trap viruses. And those proteins specifically get disrupted by glyphosate. They don't end up in the surfactants, so they can't do their job. So that makes it much easier for the virus to grab hold in the lungs and cause severe disease. I think glyphosate is a major player in the reason why the United States is doing so much more miserably against COVID than most other countries, because we're glyphosate king. We use more glyphosate per person than any other country in the world. And I think we're paying a price with respect to COVID on that. I also want to say that I love Omicron. I don't know how you feel about Omicron, but I love it.
So Omicron, if you were vaccinated, you seem to have like no added protection against Omicron. In fact, you might even be, I've seen studies where you're in a little worse position compared to an unvaccinated person who perhaps has a more robust innate immune system. But the other nice thing about Omicron is that the pandemic's over. I mean, yes. I'm a busy pediatrician with about 10,000 patients, and we haven't had a single kid end up in the hospital. But we do COVID testing because our patients want it done. And sometimes it has value. If you've got a high risk family member, you want to know whether or not you need to stay away from them. So we do testing. Up until January 1st, we had about a 5% positive rate. Almost to the day, as the year switched to 2022, our positivity has just skyrocketed. It went to 20% the first week of January. We're at over 50% right now.
That's fascinating. I didn't realize that.
And it's interesting. Some of my families have chosen to go out and get the vaccine because you can get it anywhere now. You can go to the pharmacy or all these other sites. I mean, Oregon prides itself at all these locations you can get your vaccine for COVID. So a lot of my parents have chosen to get it. And it's very interesting to see that it doesn't really matter whether you were vaccinated or not, you're getting Omicron. So it's actually this gift because the pandemic's essentially over. In the next month or two, everybody who can get sick will have gotten sick. Exactly. And a lot of us, I'm sure, have had it. Our innate immune system knocked it out probably before we can make antibodies. What do you think?
I absolutely think so. I mean, I suspect that I haven't had COVID. I haven't been vaccinated, but I suspect that I could have been exposed along the way and I could already be completely protected because of those exposures.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, but I'm guessing that those people who have a strong innate immune system don't need to worry even about COVID. That's my opinion. I think your key thing to do is to eat your certified organic food, eat whole foods, get out in the sunlight, you know, get your vitamin D up. That's pretty much it. Eat healthy, nutrient-dense foods to get your vitamins and your minerals and get out in the sunlight. It's very simple, you know?
Yep, that is perfect. I was going to tell you what would be your advice for the world, and I think you just gave it. Mm-hmm. Avoid glyphosate, eat organic, and make sure your vitamin D levels are optimal. I liked in your part of your assessment here, your article says, we believe a comprehensive risk-benefit assessment of the mRNA vaccines excludes them as positive contributors to public health, even in the context of the COVID-19 pandemic. So what does that mean in actual fact?
I think they're useless. I think they're worse than useless. And of course, it's extremely obvious for kids. It breaks my heart that they're about to roll these vaccines out for 6 months old, 2 year old. I mean, that's criminal in my opinion. I think it's so awful. And I cannot understand how they can look at the same data I'm looking at and reach such a different conclusion, because kids don't get sick from COVID. They rarely die.
Yeah.
Very rarely die.
That's been my experience.
These vaccines are so damaging. I worry too about reproduction. I think they're going to hurt the immune system. And there's certainly evidence in the VAERS database, you know, miscarriages and odd periods, you know, all of a sudden getting your period too early because you got your vaccine, this kind of thing.
And possible infertility, right?
Absolutely. I think it's going to be infertility down the road. Increased. We already have a pretty big problem with infertility. It's going to be worse.
Yeah. So this destruction of your innate immune system, it's undoubtedly going to lead to, it's undoubtedly going to lead to things like increased cancer. We're already seeing those signals, right? But a host of autoimmune conditions, is it possible? Like, I'm wondering if you might speculate, you've done a lot of research in this area. What percentage of individuals who've gotten the vaccines may still have problems in the future that relate to autoimmunity? Because that can take time to develop.
Yes, I know. And that is the issue, too. Both the neurodegenerative diseases and the autoimmune diseases take time. And so you're not going to see an immediate effect within a month or two of your vaccine. It's going to be a slow process. And I've been concerned that we're going to see a rise, you know, in all these things like lupus and multiple sclerosis and, of course, Alzheimer's and CJD, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, all these neurodegenerative diseases. These are nasty diseases. We're going to see people getting them at a younger age than they would have gotten them without the vaccine. Mm-hmm. And I think if we start doing booster shots every few months, I mean, that's just going to be horrendous. There's no way we'll miss that signal, I think. Right. The government's not looking for it. They're certainly looking the other way, which will make it harder to find. But, you know.
So I'm going to ask you the hardest question as we wrap things up. People ask me this question and I haven't figured it out. So maybe you can enlighten us. I've gotten the vaccine. Okay. I'm just hypothetically speaking. And now I'm worried. I'm hearing, you know, interviews like this one that I'm going, oh my goodness. I kind of wish maybe I hadn't gotten it, or I don't think I'm going to get any more, but what can I do now? I've already done it. I've already taken the jab and I'm becoming aware that there is risk in what I did. There might've been a little benefit in the beginning, but going forward, it seems like I did something that puts me at greater risk. Is there anything I can do?
Yeah, well, I think it's for me, it would be the very same thing that I recommend in general, which is to boost your innate immune system. And I mentioned, you know, eating certified organic food, eating whole foods, eating nutrient-dense foods, getting out in the sunlight. Also, if you're going to try to push it harder because you've got this toxic chemical you're trying to get rid of, I would suggest Epsom salt baths. You know, so the sulfate, in my opinion, sulfate deficiency is a systemic problem in our society. And so boosting your sulfate levels is really, really important for the immune system. And so one way to do that is to soak in Epsom salt baths, because that's magnesium sulfate. that gets you sulfate directly into your body. Also eating sulfur-rich foods like garlic and onions and cruciferous vegetables and seafood and eggs, organic eggs, grass-fed beef, those are all good sources of sulfur. Possibly even taking supplements, sulfur-containing supplements. And, you know, there's a liposomal glutathione that people recommend. Glutathione is super, super important for maintaining health, especially in the liver. The liver is probably going to be tasked with trying to get rid of this toxin because livers do that sort of thing. So I think your liver is being highly stressed by these spike proteins. You want to make your liver as healthy as possible. So the glutathione would be good, or even cysteine, N-acetylcysteine, or S-adenosyl methionine. Those are two sulfur-containing amino acids. Even taurine is a sulfur-containing amino acid. Taking all of those, and I would say take glycine as well. Glycine, if you're into the supplement thing, and because of your vaccine, you might want to do that just to make it even better than eating healthy food. I always advocate eating healthy food, but in a situation like this, you might want to supplement as well. And then there's zinc, of course, you know, certain minerals, maybe taking a complex of minerals that are balanced, especially, for example, bone broth will get you. Bone broth will get you both glycine and a nice balance of various minerals, because the minerals are really important to help those enzymes to work properly. So it's all those kinds of nutritional boosting of your health. And then the and eating probiotic foods would also be very helpful to maintain healthy gut microbiome. All of that's going to work towards boosting your immune function, and in particular, boosting your ability to clear the spike protein. You need to be able to clear it. And the other thing I've heard recommended, which I find interesting, is intermittent fasting. When you fast, you turn on the liposomal lysosomes that that are digesting broken molecules. And so a particular spike protein needs to be broken down. And you can break it down better when you're fasting, because your body is more inclined to be clearing out toxic debris, because it's trying to get its energy from that source instead of from the food that's coming in. So when you fast, you turn on the system that can break down toxic elements in your body. And that spike protein is right there at the top of that list.
Dr. Seneff, wow. Agreed. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
God bless.
Dr. Paul here. Doctorsandscience.com is where you go to get access to my exclusive members-only section. This is how you, the viewers, support our work. We have no sponsors. We are fully supported by you, our viewers. What do you get in the members section? It's quite a list. You get access to a couple of my ebooks. The first one is the authoritative reference list for my Vaccine Friendly Plan book. I also have written a book, very extensive, called Everyday Health, that covers pretty much what I think you should be doing if you want to live a healthy life in this world today. But there's so much more. We have a live Q&A every week after the show with yours truly, Dr. Paul, answering your questions. Submit your questions online and I will tackle as many of them as I possibly can and try to answer to the best of my ability whatever burning questions you have. In addition to this, you get transcripts of every show. We have other bonus content, and I think one of the huge bonus content pieces is the PowerPoints of the talks I'm giving as I travel around the country. People are always asking me, how can we get those PowerPoints? This is how you do it. Head on over to doctorsandscience.com and become a member and join the team of Against the Wind. Help me spread the truth and share this on social media and with your friends at doctorsandscience.com. I look forward to running with you against the wind. Go to our website, doctorsandscience.com, sign up, donate if you can, and let's make this the weekly show the nation's been waiting for. I'm Dr. Paul.